Thank you for downloading this podcast. We hope you enjoy the following message from Gateway Family Church.
Well, I'm excited today. We get to have a special service. So Pastor Appreciation Sunday comes around once a year. And every time it does, we like to do something we call Welcome to Our World. And it's my opportunity to get Perry to come out on stage and talk. Don't you like to hear Perry talk? So I'm excited to have Perry with us today to get to share her heart. And whenever we do Welcome to Our World, we just kind of like to share a little bit of our perspective when it comes to church, when it comes to life. Because a lot of times you get to hear me preach, but you don't always get to hear some of the stuff that both of us have to kind of deal with and the way that we kind of deal with all the issues that go on at the church. And so this is kind of our opportunity to talk about that. And before we do, though, I want to share with you one little thing. I was telling somebody before service, I said, you know, yesterday I said I wasn't feeling awesome. And so I took a Benadryl before I went to bed because my nose was running everywhere. And I thought, man, I'm not going to be able to preach tomorrow. So I took a Benadryl before I went to bed. And I said, I just feel like everything's kind of, you know, like today, this morning, when we're getting started today, it felt like everything was kind of walking through mud. And I said, I wonder if I just got like medicine head off of one little Benadryl, you know, like I should have. I'm glad I was never like a drug addict or something. I would never wake up. So John was like, I think maybe you're dreaming. Maybe this isn't really happening. And I said, you laugh, but that's my nightmare. Like for real, I had a nightmare the other day that was church. Like you are part of my nightmares. The other day I had this dream that I get up to speak and I didn't have a sermon ready, right? And so I'm getting up to speak, I don't have anything ready, and you can kind of tell I was kind of mumbling through like what I was supposed to be saying. And I don't know if it's just me or if it's everybody, but whenever I try to read something in my dreams, it's all jumbled. I can't read in my dreams. And so I was like, I couldn't read anything. And so I just started comparing worship to going to the bathroom. And I'm like, what am I talking about? And now it's like the words are coming out and I can't stop them. And people are just getting up and leaving, like just left and right. And I was like, no, please, I'm not always like this. And so so it is my nightmare, Jonathan, to have a service that just goes absolutely haywire. So if I start getting crazy today, that's why Perry's on stage to kind of straighten me out. You want to say anything?
I will dismiss him off the stage. If that's right.
She will dismiss me off the stage. That's good. Well, one of the things that we've been talking about is we've been looking forward to next year. And I feel like every year God teaches us something new to prepare us for the next year. And so we actually look back through our notes from last year's service when we did Welcome to Our World. And at that point, I had just been coming off of working a secular job on top of pastoring, and we had lost our worship pastor, and at that point we had just hired Jonathan and Anna to come on and be a part of our team, and so we were very excited about that. And so we were in that kind of transition phase last year, and this year I really feel like one of the things God has been teaching us is the idea of giving things away. And I don't just mean like Oprah, like, you get a car and you get a car. Not like that. I wish we could do that. Like, that'd be awesome, right? But in leadership and responsibility, I think God has been teaching us that for a portion of our life, it's been all about us. Like, Perry and I have not only led Sunday mornings, but then, therefore, while Perry was a children's worker, she would be the children's leader 3 out of 4 weeks of every month. And so so we didn't get to go to church together for a long time. And so a lot just kind of hung on our shoulders to make church happen. And I think one of the things God is preparing us for this year, and I'm telling you this, is that we had just learned how to give and give and give responsibility and leadership away, because it's our heart, it's not in our desire to be at the top of every pyramid. It's our desire to let everybody have their own pyramid, right? To let everybody be a part of what God's doing, and we certainly don't want to hoard that. And so that's part of what God's been speaking to us for this coming year, is that we need to prepare for growth, prepare for another level, and in order to do that, we've got to really develop leaders and lift people up and make things happen. We've got this Operation Christmas Child Packing Party coming up in a couple of weeks, And I was talking to some of the people that are in charge of that, Todd and Erica McNeil, and kind of heading that up for me. And they said, well, what can we do to help you with, you know, pack and party? And I said, you can do it all, like all of it. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with it except to show up. You know, like, that's my goal, is just to be here and you take over, you know. And same is true. Jonathan this morning, he was asking me, well, how do we, you know, we have to throw out a song, so how do we need a chance? I said, I don't care. Like, whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy, let's do that. You know, that when you're happy, I'm happy. And so God is really teaching us how to give stuff away. So we're excited about that. And something that we've kind of picked up or developed is kind of a little motto or a saying for, I feel like maybe for 2017, is what we're about to put on the board right behind me, on the screen right behind me. And it's this. And we put it in tweet form. Someone was telling me the other day, they said, look, whatever it is that you want to say that's important, you need to make sure you can fit it in a tweet. And for those of you that don't know what Twitter is, don't worry about it. It just means short and jumbled and doesn't look right. So here's what it says. At GFC Birmingham, we are intentional about developing a thriving relationship with God defined by our passionate worship, irrational generosity, and love of all people. And so today, what Perry and I want to do is we want to take that thought and kind of break it down into what that means for us and what that means for the church as a whole. So the word of the day is going to be that top one right there, intentional. That's going to be the word for the day. And I was telling Perry, she said, I said, how should we start this off? And she said, well, really, I think the word intentional should be in every aspect of this saying, right? So what does it mean, babe, for you? Whenever I say intentional, how does that work for you? Yes, I am throwing you on the spot. Go for it.
I think being intentional is not doing things flippantly, you know, and just really, obviously with the Lord and prayer and stuff, but just really putting thought into something. You know, when you think, when you're doing anything in life, when you're practicing a sport or becoming better at something, you're intentionally practicing, or if you're disciplining your children, you're being intentional about shaping their character. And so I think in our relationship with the Lord, a lot of times we're not intentional about it. You know, we just talk to the Lord maybe on Sundays, or if we hear someone's dying of cancer or something like that. But are we really intentional about pursuing the Lord and deepening our relationship with Him?
Yeah, I think it was funny whenever you think of the word intentional. We even try to make it, even the little things, intentional. So Perry and I were walking through the curtain a while ago, and just FYI, whenever we have the curtain closed, we do not like it when people walk through the middle of the curtain. That's just my pet peeve. It's my OCD kicking in, because then the curtain stays open, everybody sees the light shining
through. I
walk through
the middle every time.
I know, and I'm trying to get her to stop. So we walk through the curtain, and I don't know if you've noticed this or not, probably not, but we just installed some hooks, right? These, like, brass hooks or whatever color they are, I don't know. And so after the service, we pulled the curtains back, you know, and she said, you know, I really like these hooks. And she said, after service, it looks so nice. Everything's just, you know, just so. And she said, this is intentional. This is intentional. And it's not a matter of doing something because it looks good. It's a matter of having a purpose behind what you do, making a plan. Something Perry said to me last night was the idea of creating opportunities for stuff to happen, you know. Sometimes we go through life and we just hope. We hope something good's going to happen. We hope a miracle's going to happen. We hope, and I think I told you this a few weeks ago, when it comes to giving, that it's giving, or receiving from God isn't about the big miracle check in the mail. That's great if it happens for you, but really God established this idea of sowing and reaping for a purpose, right? So you don't just go out into your garden and just hope that tomatoes are going to pop up, right? What do? You plant a seed, and you plant that seed, and then you water that seed, and you fertilize that. Now, you can't make the plant grow, but you can create the opportunity for the plant to grow. That is good. I just made that up right there on the spot. That was really good. Some of y'all are missing out a good point to say amen. Y'all just thought this was a talking to, but this is a message, so you better get with me today. So we want to be intentional with everything what we do. So let's take that first line there of developing thriving relationships with Christ. And so I want to talk to you for just a second, then I'm going to give Perry a chance to talk too, about developing a thriving relationship with Jesus Christ. I believe that our relationship with Him, the word thrive there is super important. Because when I think of somebody thriving in something, I feel like they are just killing it, right? Like when I think of someone that thrives in their job, I think of Perry, honestly. I'm not saying this because she's up here. I tell her this all the time. I'm super jealous of her. Like that's, like when I start listing out my sins, jealousy is one of them, and it's usually aimed towards her because she has this like Midas touch, right? Everything she touches turns to gold. When we were younger, we were playing cards one time, and she would always win in cards. And I would say, I said, she cheats. Like, she is a cheater. And her mom was like, she is not a cheater. She is blessed of the Lord. And she starts quoting all these scriptures. I was like, you can put your scriptures back in the Bible. This girl's cheating, you know? But the fact was, she was just really good. And it's like everything she does prospers. She's like Joseph without the prison. And so every school she's been in, she's won like Teacher of the Year. And I think, man, I would love to thrive the way Perry thrives, right? But it's intentional. She creates those opportunities through her hard work and her dedication. The same is true with our relationship with Jesus Christ. We have to create that opportunity for us to thrive. We have to put in the effort and the work in any relationship that you have. You've got to create that opportunity. And when I think of having a relationship with Jesus Christ, a thriving relationship, honestly, the word that comes to my mind is the word follow. The word follow. And we talk all the time about Jesus being your Savior, but are you following Him? Because there's a difference. There's a difference. I've got this little video clip. If we can show it, I hope we can. This is a commercial that I just really like. I love the song. I downloaded it to my phone. So why don't you watch this real quick, and you'll have to look past my big old bald head. But turn it up.
Follow you wherever you may go. There isn't an ocean too deep. A mountain so high it can keep me away. From my love, you are my destiny. I love you. Where you go, I follow. Your love is me, my true love.
Isn't that a cool song? I love that. I love that song. And whenever I listened to that song, like the first time I heard it, I was like, I'm downloading this song. And Perry was in Rhode Island. And I was like, when she gets back from Rhode Island, like I'm going to have this song on repeat in the car when I pick her up at the airport. And then this other lady was traveling with her, and I had to pick her up too. And it got real weird there for a minute, you know. And so, yeah, go for it.
I was thinking about being intentional with your relationship with Christ, and I was reminded of, like, and you probably can think back too, of friends that you were really close to in high school or back in the day, and you didn't have a big argument or anything like that, but you just kind of lost touch with them, and so you kind of grew apart, and you may not talk to them anymore, and you don't really have a relationship with them. And I think about that with Christ. A lot of times we know He's there and that He will always be there for us, but sometimes if we're not intentional about our relationship, we grow apart, and you don't realize that it's not something that you have intentionally done, but you haven't been intentionally talking to Him and reading His word and listening to His voice. And so, if you kind of think about it that way, and God's kind of like one of those friends that you can pick back up where you left off. But if you don't ever pick back up during the week and as time goes on, you are going to grow apart. And before long, you're going to think, I don't even know Him anymore, you know. And so I kind of relate it to that, too.
Yeah, I think one of the things, you know, whenever we talk about being intentional with our relationship and following Him, you know, I came across this verse, Acts chapter 4, verse 13. And it says, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated, common men, they were astonished. And they recognized that they had been with Jesus. And I think, you know, I feel like that's kind of where we are. You know, at least that's kind of my verse. because I am very common and uneducated, right? And so for me, I think what's, you know, sometimes people think, oh, you've got to be extraordinary, or you've got to have all this education, or you've got to have the Midas touch, right? You've got to have all this stuff. But no, in this situation, they were bold, and their boldness showed the other people that they had been with Jesus because they were intentional about following Christ. They were intentional about not just following, like walking behind, but following in that I'm going to do what you're doing. I'm going to act the way you act. I'm going to be like you are. And you can't know how someone is until you're around them, until you spend time with them, right? And I think Perry and I were talking, and I said, man, when you were, I didn't call her man, but whenever you were in Rhode Island, I said, I woke up late both mornings that you were gone. I said, because I'm so used to my alarm goes off so she can get out of bed, right? I don't know why her alarm doesn't go off.
My alarm goes off first.
And she hits snooze. So mine goes off, and I'm like, hey, you need to get out of bed. So she gets out of bed, and I said, I'm so used to you going in the, she goes in the bathroom, like the way our bathroom's set up, she goes in the bathroom, it's right there by the bedroom, and she starts fixing herself up, doing her makeup, getting dressed, whatever she's doing, and she turns on her Bible on her phone and listens to it, and she plays it really loud, apparently. And I said, I'm so used to that waking me up and keeping me up, listening to you spend time with God, that I get out of bed. And I said, while you were gone, I didn't have anybody spending time with God around me, and I just stayed in bed. I just kept hitting the snooze, and I just kept snoozing, right? And I said, it's important for me. But I think that is part of what she does, is she's very intentional about getting up, setting aside that time, and spending that time with God when nobody else is around, nobody's bothering her. She closes the door. I can hear it, but she is in her own little space. And so I think that's important for us to do, is to really, and I don't want to steal your point, but you got to create time. And that's one of the things you were going to talk about, is creating that time.
So some of you can relate. I'm not perfect at all at this, but if I'm not intentional with when and how I spend time with the Lord, it just won't happen. And so in the mornings is when I do it. And it's just something practical. I'd encourage you to try if you don't have a time that you spend with the Lord. But I have the Bible app on my phone. And when I'm getting ready, I just listen to His Word. And honestly, I'm intentional about not daydreaming and just really focusing on what I need to hear from the Lord that day. But I know as the day goes on, I may think, oh, well, I can spend some time with them right when I get home from work, or maybe right when the kids go to bed. But that may be the time, you know, when a kid throws up, or when Gabriel's like, oh, let's just watch one show on TV, or the kid has to go to basketball practice. And so I know for me it won't happen unless I set that certain time. Now, that certain time may not be in the morning for you, but whatever it is, just be intentional about setting that appointment with the Lord, and it could be 5 minutes. And my time isn't the same every single day. It depends on how many times I hit the snooze. And so, but I encourage you to spend some time with the Lord, and it does feel good to start your day that way. It really does.
Yeah.
But, also, I have on here too, it creates an atmosphere. It kind of helps me keep life in perspective. When I start my day with the Lord, it sets an atmosphere for how I go into my job with the kids, and it sets the atmosphere of how I come home. Do I always come home in a good mood? No. Do I always wake up in a good mood? No. I'm not saying that, but it does help change my mind and set the atmosphere for the home.
And I think too, like one of the things that we try to do is sometimes our life gets away from us, right? Our schedule gets away from us, and sometimes our schedule gets set for us, you know, and so we're like running around with chickens with our heads cut off. This past week, she was gone Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, comes home Tuesday night late, and then Wednesday we've got church. Thursday, she's got a small group. Friday, I've got a men's thing to go to, and so it's like every night of the week I haven't seen her, like being able to have that moment of just, hey, babe, how are you doing today? You know, we're just gone all the time doing stuff. And this is even without kids playing sports right now. So you have these moments where your schedule just gets crazy. And I'm going to tell you this. When your life is crazy, when your schedule is crazy, your stress level goes up. And so one of the things that I try to do, too, is whenever we're at home, there's some days I would love to just turn on SportsCenter and chill out and watch it. But I know that's not realistic all the time. And so, like, if we're cleaning up or we're doing something at the house, and she's the one that kind of taught me to do this, is she'll shut everything down, and I'll shut everything down, and we'll get on, like, on our TV, we'll turn on worship music. And my kids, it's not that my kids aren't saved, but they're just like, they want to watch Disney or they want to watch whatever. And we're like, no, we're going to just listen to worship music, and we're going to clean, and we're going to get the stuff done that we've got to do. And the reason is it sets this atmosphere in our home that keeps me from, when my stress is way up here, it keeps me from like yelling at a kid, right? And it helps bring that stress level down, releases some of that pressure. And so now we can have a home that's at least pretends like we love each other sometimes. You know how it is. I mean, sometimes you've got this, you're like this. And so it's nice to have those moments. And so spending time with God, letting some worship music play, just taking those moments. The other thing is, for some of you that maybe you're saying, I wish my husband or I wish my wife were more, in love with Christ. I wish my spouse or I wish my kids had more of that relationship with Jesus Christ. When you set the atmosphere in your house, then you're creating the opportunity for those around you to thrive in their relationship with God. I think it's important, like whenever I hear her playing her Bible and I get up, so then I go to the kitchen and I start making lunches for the kids, then I have to play my Bible, right? And at first it's like competition, I got to keep up with her, but then it turns into relationship with Christ that I'm playing my Bible so while I'm doing something, I can listen to the Word of God, and then I know she's going to ask me questions or she's going to want to talk about it. So then I've got to really focus and I pay attention. And it starts out as I'm hearing her do it and it makes me do it. But then after a while, it becomes just a part of what I do too. And so it's important that you set that atmosphere in your home, and it'll create the opportunity for everybody else to really grow in their relationship. The next thing we want to talk about is passionate worship. And so whenever we talk about passionate worship, I want to just say this. Worship isn't done. It's DNA. So if you're taking notes this morning, that's actually one of your blanks. Worship isn't done, it's DNA. Worship is something that should be in you, not just something you're acting out. And we think that the only people that have a calling to worship are the people that are on stage. Can I tell you something? We're all called to worship God. We got some people on stage that have some talent for singing and playing instruments. But singing and playing instruments is not worship. I can go to any concert in downtown Birmingham and show you lots of people that have talent to sing and play an instrument, but they ain't worshiping God. These people that get on stage and do it, it's their calling to help lead us in worship, but it is not the fact that they are the only ones that are called to worship. When you gave your heart to Jesus Christ, the Bible says you became a new creation. You were given a brand new spiritual DNA, and that DNA is infused with worship. And so whenever I worship God, one of the things I feel like we got to be passionate about is that passionate worship comes from deep inside. Look, there are some Sunday mornings, I'm going to be real, there's some Sunday mornings I don't feel like worship. There's some Sunday mornings it's hard for me to worship. Because the whole time I'm thinking, oh God, service just started. It's 10:01 and there's like 7 people in the crowd. What are we going to do? Like, this is going to be that Sunday that nobody comes. You know, and look, that's me thinking. And so it's hard. Or it's that Sunday morning I get up and we're trying to worship God and I look up and Jonathan's like, oh, we had 3 people cancel and this person's not here. And you know, Perry's up here just making up words to songs and we don't know what's happening. So the whole time as a pastor, I'm freaking out, right? It's hard to worship. That's why I love those opportunities when I come backstage. It's like, I can't see anything. I don't know how many people are here. I don't know if the band's doing it right or doing it wrong. And I can just worship God. But here's the thing. If it's in my DNA, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are around it. It should come out anyway. And there's times we'll be worshiping to a slow song. And you'll see me over there. I'm just like, I just feel like something's inside of me. Why? Because it's in me. It's something in me that's wanting to come out. And I get frustrated sometimes whenever people don't allow what's in them to come out. Now, I don't care how you worship. Like some of you are, you know, you're raising your hand. Some of you jumping up and down. Some of you, you know, you're just sitting there like this. I don't care how you worship as long as what you're doing is what's coming from inside of you. And it's not because of your tradition. And it's not because of your fear. And it's not because of what you think you're supposed to be doing at that moment. It should be what's inside of you to do. I always like to watch whenever someone has a break from being on stage. Y'all don't think I watch you. But I like to look around every so often and just see. Like, if someone's not on stage that's supposed to be on stage, I want to see, A, do they show up? And B, do they actually worship? I like to watch some of you guys that want to tell me all about how spiritual you are. And then I want to see, do you even worship God? I mean, it's not about legalism. Again, I'm going back to, I don't care how you do it. There's sometimes my worship, I just feel frozen. I'm just like, man, I can't even move right now. God, I just love you so much. There's other times I want to just jump and like start kicking things and throw that pumpkin down and just like, I'm just wild, you know? But it's all about what's coming out of you. It's got to be in your DNA. And so how do I do that? Well, I think a couple of things is you got to get your mind right, get your heart right on what worship really is and what it really isn't. You know, and Perry's going to talk to you about some of that. But first, I want you to look at Psalm 145, verse 3. This is a great verse. This is going to change your life, right? You ready? It says, "Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom." Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. There's another version, the ESV says this, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised." Now, I used to read that all the time, and I was thinking about it. And the other day it hit me, if we serve a great God, then He deserves great worship. And sometimes whenever I come into worship, if I'm not giving God great worship, I'm wondering if I'm serving a great God. Or maybe I'm just serving an okay God. Am I just serving a good God? Am I just serving a God that's not existent? Right? I'll show God how great He is by how great I worship. And so I want to give God a great praise. I want to give Him great worship. Why? Because He has been great to me. And if He doesn't do anything else for me, He has forgiven my sin. So I can go to heaven and be with Him forever. I don't care what other miracles He does or doesn't do in my life. That right there is the best He could ever do. That's worthy of great praise. So when you serve a great God, you're going to worship Him with great praise. So next time you come into worship and you're like, I don't want to worship. Kind of like Colt saying, I don't want to eat tacos, right? Then you need to think, am I serving a great God today? And if He's great, am I giving Him great praise? Am I giving Him what I've got? Everything that's within me. Right? Go ahead, babe.
We were kind of talking through this. I was reminded, actually, it happened last week. And I wasn't probably intentionally worshiping God. I was listening to some songs Jonathan wanted us to practice for this week and the weeks to come. And so I was just had the music on in the home, and the kids were, I don't know what they're doing, but they were doing something. And I was at the sink washing dishes. And so I'm listening to this song, and I end up worshiping the Lord and kind of just interceding for someone and just really, I guess, singing like kind of for them. I don't know how to explain it, but it kind of turned into worship. At first, it was just kind of listening to a song. And as I'm standing at the sink, I just felt like the Lord had that still small voice and said, "I hear you." And that was it. That was it. I hear you. But in that moment, everything changed, you know. And I think, you know, what if we're consistent about being intentional in our relationship with God? And then sometimes in those spontaneous moments, like He speaks to us, you know. And it was something very small, a simple sentence. But it was what I needed to know, that the Lord heard me in that moment. This... I was thinking too, like, if your worship and my worship is only happening on Sunday mornings when you come, you know, is that being intentional in your relationship with the Lord, you know? And it doesn't happen for me as much as it should. I'm being honest. It really doesn't. But think this week, spend one extra day or one extra moment being intentional with your worship and the time with the Lord. Psalm 145:2, it says, "Every day I will bless you and praise your name forever and ever." So the Lord wants us to talk to him every single day, you know, and it can be a simple, I love you, Lord. Thank you for all you've done for me. And sometimes if I'm having those moments where our atmosphere isn't right in the home, where I'm just like griping and complaining in my head and I catch myself barking at the kids or whatever, I'll start thanking the Lord. Thank you, Lord, for our health. Thank you that you've given me three beautiful, obnoxious children that I can love. You know, thank you for giving me a husband that is involved in everything we do at a family. He serves our family and hears the Lord. So there's a lot that we can be thankful for in the midst of feeling unthankful.
And I'm going to say this before we move off of worship. I really think, you know, it is our desire. For those of you that are a guest here today, thank you so much for being here. But for those of you that are home folks, I mean, it's our desire, and you know this because you've talked to me about it. It's our desire not for us to just come do church. It's our desire to win lost people. It's our desire to help unchurched people come into a place where they can meet God face to face. What I don't ever want people to do is come to church and they meet an okay God. I want to meet a great God. Well, how do they meet a great God? Through great worship. Through great worship. If you're trying to get someone to meet somebody, right? If Perry's trying to get somebody to meet me and to know me and, hey, you need to meet my husband. She's not going to be like, hey, you need to meet my husband. He is so okay. Like, he lives at my house. You know? And he talks to me sometimes. Like, that person is not going to be excited about meeting me. But if she comes in saying, I've got a great husband, and he's wonderful, and his head is beautifully bald, and he's got a great beard. Like, all of a sudden, this guy's going to be like, or woman, or whoever it is going to be like, wow, I really need to meet this person and touch their beard. Like, that's what's going to happen. So it's important that we give great God great praise. The third thing is this, the irrational generosity. Irrational generosity. You know, it's funny, whenever I think of irrational generosity, this church is a very generous church. And I want us to go beyond generosity into that irrational generosity. I really like that term. I like that term because it shows me that sometimes you just do stuff that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, right? And I don't know about you, but there's been times whenever God has spoken to us to be generous, and it didn't make any sense whatsoever. It was like, hey, I know you're saving money for something, but why don't you give it away? Perry and I were like, okay. When we first got started, I'd be like, Perry, we're going to give this money away. And she'd be like, what? And then it turned into, Perry, we're going to give this money away. Yeah, I figured you would. You know, it's like, so, you know, I'm used to it.
So Gabriel, he does our budget in our home. And so, like, he, as of recently, is, like, stalking the bank account. It's kind of weird. But, like, there'll be, like, $2 I'll spend. And he'll be like, why are you spending those $2? That wasn't in the budget. What are you doing? And then he'll say, oh, let's give $600 to something. I'm like, what? You know, you can't tell me I can't spend $2 and then you spend $600. But so the irrational part, that is definitely him. Like, that's not the Lord doesn't speak to me personally that way. He speaks to him. But I do feel like there's place for that. And I know that when he says something like that, he really has heard from the Lord, you know, to be generous. And so that's definitely his strength.
And I think the one thing about generosity is we think sometimes generosity is all about giving the biggest gift you can possibly give. But in reality, generosity is different for different people. I'm more of a big picture generosity guy, right? Like, so I'm seeing, you know what? I'm going to be honest, I apologize. I haven't told you guys some of the things that this church has done as far as being generous. And I should tell you, but sometimes I think, am I supposed to tell people when we give something or am I not? I don't ever know where that right hand, left hand thing goes. But like the other day, there's a church here in town, a local church, that was kind of struggling already, and then their AC went out. Well, man, even in the fall, it's hot here, right? And so you can't be going around without AC. So I talked to the trustees, and we just wrote them a $1,000 check from the church. Said, hey, you know, here's $1,000. You know, I hope that goes towards your AC, but do whatever you want to do with it. And then I was sitting in my office the other day, and I'm going through our mission stuff. And so what we do is I tell you guys all the time, 10% of everything that we give away to missions and different groups and organizations. Well, I'm going through our mission stuff, and everybody's getting something. All the missionaries are getting something. And I thought, man, we got a little bit of extra money. And I said, you know, I told Beverly or Wendy, I said, hey, let's write a check to Shane Jones. And some of y'all know Shane, some of you don't. He left here to go start a church in Tuscaloosa. And And so their church is trying to get off the ground and trying to get going. And I thought, you know, it's pastor appreciation time. Let's just send him some money. You know, and he texted me back. He said, I don't know why you sent this, but thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, like he was like, we love you guys so much. Thank you to the church. And I think it's one of those things. To me, I see big picture. I see a church in need. I see a pastor. And I've got a heart for pastors, obviously. And so for me, I'm always kind of that big picture guy, whereas Perry is more of the thoughtful individual. So I'm going to send... When I give, it's probably going to be bigger. When she gives, it's probably going to be smaller, but it'll have more thought to it. So Colt goes to school, and when he goes to school, they put him in this little holding room, right, before they go to class. Sounds like holding cell. God's just preparing him for his future. No. And so they put him in this room before they go to class, and somehow Perry found out through Colt or one of the kids that the teacher that's stationed in there likes chocolate.
And you know, if you know Colt, when he hears candy or chocolate, his ears perk up. So he heard, I guess, on the first or second day of school that this teacher liked chocolate.
And so Perry goes out, and see, I never would have thought about this, but Perry goes out and she goes and buys a bag of M&Ms and tells Colt, I'm putting these in your backpack. Give these to the teacher in the holding room, whatever it is. I don't know what it is. Give them to that person. Of course, he still hasn't done it. They're still in his backpack. I'm shocked he hasn't eaten them. But Perry thinks like that. And so you may be generous different. You may not be the person that writes a $100 check or a $1,000 check. That may not be you. You might be the person that knows what someone really, really needs or wants, and you provide that for them. And that thoughtfulness shows generosity. He's not here today. He's sick, but I'm sure Liz will tell him the story that I talked about him. But my friend Wes, Liz's husband, 1 year for Christmas said, I want to give you something. And he gave me this box. And it's like an old cigar box, right? And I don't smoke. But I just looked at this cigar box and I was like, okay, so tell me about the cigar box. And he said, man, this box has been with me when I was homeless. This box kept my treasures. Whenever I got married, this box was with me. Everywhere I've gone, everything I've done, when my house burned down, this is the box that I saved. And he's just like, this has been very special to me, and I want to give it to you. Well, let me tell you something. That box is extremely special to me now. Like, that box sits in a place of prominence, and I only put important things in that box. Why? Was the box super expensive? I have no idea. But it was thoughtful, and it was generous. It was very generous. And so I encourage you, be intentional in your generosity. Whether you're a big giver or a small giver, be intentional with your generosity. One of the things I wanted to say is, before you can be irrational, you have to be intentional. Make a plan to give. Something that she and I have always done is we tithe right off the top. We give to missions right off the top. But then we also set aside extra money that's just called offering. And for the most part, we send it to the church. It's just our offering money goes to the church. But we just know that in any month, if there's something that we want to give special to somebody or to something, we've got this money earmarked every month just to give away. Like, it's just our offering money. And the point of that is, I set a plan to be generous. And whenever you learn to first be intentional with your generosity, it trains you to the point where you can be irrational with your generosity. Roger, I'm going to skip down to the very last verse. Can we go ahead and skip down to the very last verse real quick? I just want to show you this verse. There's a story of a man named Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a wee little man. And a wee little man was he. And so Zacchaeus had this problem with greed. And he was a tax collector, and he stole money from people until the one day Jesus shows up in his life. And when Jesus shows up in Zacchaeus' life, it changes everything. And here's what Zacchaeus does when Jesus shows up. It says, but Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, Lord, look, here now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. That is irrational giving. But he was living an intentional life with Jesus Christ. And whenever you learn to live intentional, irrational just becomes a part of what you do. So So it's important for you to know that. Anything else you want to say about generosity?
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes, too, you don't have to look at other people necessarily and think what they need, but think about what God's gifted me. And I think about people that in our lives that have been generous to us. Sometimes it's through a meal, or it's through one thing my mom does is she makes our favorite meals and then freezes them so that we can cook them on nights that we're too busy. Or it's not a huge thing, but every time I visit my parents, my dad gives us like $20 or $40. Just, I don't know why, just because. And then I think about, you know, just little small specific things, you know, people have done for my children. I'm noticing that Emma Ray likes earrings or Colt likes candy. Those kind of things you think are, nah, whatever. But that's generosity, you know, and it's noticed for the person that you're being generous to. So don't think it's got to be hard or something that you do need to plan it, but something that's going to take a lot of time. Think about what you're good at and what you're gifted at and give that generosity to someone else.
That's good. The second to last thing we want to talk about today is having love for all people. I think it's funny that we are in this multicultural, diverse church. And I've asked, one time I was talking to Ryan, who is our youth pastor. He's not here today, but I was talking to Ryan one time, and we were talking about this other church that he's got friends at, and he said, yeah, they're trying really hard to be diverse. They're trying really hard to be multicultural. And he said, but it's not working out. And I said, but why doesn't it work? And he said, I think it's because they try too hard. And I said, well, what do we do? Because we don't try at all. I said, we don't do anything to appeal to any color person or any background person. I said, why are we diverse? And he said, I think it's because you don't try. And he said, it's because you have friends. You don't have black friends and white friends and Hispanic friends. You just have friends. And because you're the leader and the pastor, that trickles down to everybody else. And we really just love people, no matter what color they are or background they are or whoever comes in. He said, you've kind of taught us just to look at people as people. And I'm not saying that to brag on me. I'm saying that to brag on us. I just find it very interesting that we don't have to try. We are. Does that make sense? And whenever you just are friends with people and you don't worry about what color they are, you don't worry about, oh man, how many white friends do I have? I got to get me some more white friends so I look more diverse. I'm not up here going, oh man, you know, this Sunday Sean was the only black guy on stage and we stuck him in the dark corner. We can't see him anyway. You know, like I wasn't worried about that, you know. Because that was funny, wasn't it? I don't think about, well, John, you got to get, you know, a certain number of colors on the stage or we're not diverse. Because nobody cares. Like here, it's just like, well, okay, well, that's Sean's today. And then, you know, next week, Christina will be up there. And you know, we'll just have different random people. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter to us. And I think that's important. I think we have to be together in our differences. I recognize that we're all different. I recognize that. But you know what? I share commonalities with everybody. Like, I can find common ground with any of you. And it doesn't matter what color. Like, I never base my commonality with you on what color you are. I never base my commonality with you on what social status you are, how much money you make or don't make. It doesn't matter to me. It matters that we find common ground in there somewhere. And probably for me, honestly, living overseas probably had something to do with it. When I was a kid living in another country where I was the only white kid, you know, in certain situations, that was one of those things that taught me just not to worry and just to be friends with whoever. When I was talking to him, I started thinking about my son Colt is 5 and he's in kindergarten. And he's learning about patterns, but he doesn't call them patterns. He calls them patterns. Patterns, right? And we started laughing because now we try to get him to tell us about all the patterns he sees. And Colt's kind of like me. He's got this creative, artsy kind of brain.
He's a lot like Gabriel.
Yes. And so he thinks in that he thinks in that. And I was talking to him the other day, and he said, look, Dad, I've got a pattern on, you know. And I was like, okay, like, what's your pattern, you know. And it wasn't even really that much of a pattern, but it was like, look, circle, square, circle. And I was like, man, you're right, that is a pattern. And whenever I was working on this message, it was like God showed me in our church, in our life, we have to have these patterns. Because you could have black, white, and that becomes a pattern. They're different, but whenever you group them as a pattern, they're the same. Does that make sense? Square, circle, or square, circle, square, circle. It's a pattern. It makes them all the same. Now all of a sudden they're part of a group together. Together they become one. And I thought that about us. I thought, you know, we are very different. Every time someone comes, they're like, you've got the weirdest church. And they said, you've got like a teenager sitting next to a, you know, a 90-year-old person. How did you get those two people together? I said, I don't know. And they're like, or people will meet me for the first time and they'll say, hey, you're young-ish, you know, like you're in your 30s. I bet you got a church that's full of 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds. And I'm like, you know what? Like the last three people that joined the church were 60, 70, and 80 years old. I don't know how that works. I don't understand the dynamics of this church, except we just kind of view life in this pattern that we're all patterns. We've got this pattern going on here where we're all different, but because we're in the pattern, we're all one and we're together. Does that make sense? Go ahead and share what you were going to say about stories real quick. Remember last night you talked about our stories?
Oh, yeah. So I was thinking about stories. Sorry. I see my notes down now. That a lot of times to love people and be close to them, I really struggle sometimes with just making an initial assumption about somebody, but instead to get to know people's stories. And I think that's one thing that Gabriel does well is tell stories. So y'all know just about all of our life because it gets spilled out on the stage. But in our position, sometimes it's hard to be, you know, best friends with everybody. But I love to know your story, and we love to know your story, and we love for you to know ours. And so sometimes whenever you feel like you don't have common ground with somebody, maybe in your family or somebody at your job place, get to know their story. Get to know their story, and that can help you love them more. You know, you might see why they're a little bit quirky or why they're a little bit weird or why they have that sad look on their face, you know. So get to know their story, and then God can use you to be generous with them, whether it's being their encourager every day or whatever. But
And you have to, Perry and I were talking about this last night, that whenever you find out their stories, it helps you to fight past judgment, you know, to get to love. A lot of times we struggle to love people because we judge them right off the bat. You know, you see them drive up in that car and you're just like, oh, I know what this person's all about. No, you don't. Like, you don't. But in our brain, sometimes we judge people from the beginning. And it's hard whenever you deal with that. But as you learn people's stories, it helps you to push past any kind of preconceived notions and get to that place where you can love people. Does that make sense? And we got a verse here, Matthew 7:1-5. You want to read that?
Judge not that you be not judged, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take out the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck out of your brother's eye.
I think a lot of times our problem is we don't know that we're judging people. And I think one thing that this whole political season has taught me and frustrates me is this whole idea of Republicans versus Democrats, conservative versus liberals. And it's like we can't see past our political view, and we can't see the fault in our own political view. We only see the fault in everybody else's political view. Well, how can you vote for him? He, you know, that person's going to, you know, take away all of our guns, or this person supports abortion, or this person is, you know, this thing, and this person's a womanizer, and this, you know, this one's a liar. And it's like we can't see past our own issue, and so we just start judging everybody else. And I told somebody here, or I told the church here one time a while back, I said, I really don't want to be a Republican or a Democrat. Like, I just want to be a Christian. And I feel like there's a middle ground there somewhere between the two. And I wish we could come back to that. I don't know that we can. I don't know if our nation is too far gone. But it's definitely a place of prayer that we need to start having. Is God, bring us back to that place where I don't claim Republican or Democrat before I claim Christian. That I should be a servant, a follower of Jesus Christ, number one. And stop judging everybody else. I used to judge people because they would say they were this or they were that. And then after a while, I started noticing, I really love this person. And here, because we don't talk politics too much, I don't know who's Republican and Democrat in here. And I don't want to know. Because I just want to love you for who you are. Does that make sense? The last thing, and this is, this is kind of our last thing, but share that thought. You see this one right here? That right there. You brought that up last night. Can you share that real quick, and then we got to shut it down.
I was thinking about a simple way to love people or to show love to people is to encourage them and to create courage in them. And I was thinking about how if you just make that a habit of your life to smile at people and to say, hey, I appreciate you, or thank you for doing this, but just make that a habit, that it makes it easier when you have those moments of conflict, you know, that people know that, you know, that he or she is an encourager. And so I would just encourage you to do that. And sometimes I think about there's those people that are just really hard to do that to. Like, there's really nothing good you can say or anything. Like, when you think about them, it's like you think they're the devil. Well, use that moment to pray for them. You know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Don't say anything at all, but use those moments to pray for people. There are people in my life that they just kind of irritate me. And instead of me trying to be God for them and trying to fix them, I have just turned my brain off to not think about them and think about all the bad things, but to pray for them.
The last thought is this: intentional relationship leads to spontaneous obedience. This is a good thought for you to write down. Intentional relationship leads to spontaneous obedience. And that was something Perry and I were talking about the other day, is whenever we learn to be intentional in our relationship with Jesus Christ, it makes it really easy for us to just obey without asking questions. Have you ever had a kid that every time you ask them to do something, they say why, and can I wait a minute? Like my oldest son, if I say, Gabriel, I need you to take out the trash, just wait a minute, I'll get to it in a minute. I'm like, no, you're going to do it right now. Like, I'll take that iPad and throw it through the wall. You're going to get up and go do it. You know what I mean? Because I said, and that's where Dad rises up in me. The idea is this: whenever we have this intentional relationship with Jesus Christ, we don't have those moments like Jonah had, where God says, I want you to go to Nineveh. And he says, no, I think I'm going to take a boat over here instead. Right? It's intentional relationship leads to spontaneous obedience. Lord, whatever it is that you want me to do, I'm ready. Let's go do it. Let's just go. Let's just try it. And we become excited about obeying Christ instead of scared of obeying Christ. And there's a story. I always say this, one of my favorite stories. They're all like one of my favorite stories. But Mark chapter 5, verses 18 through 20, Jesus just got through casting out just a whole bunch of demons out of this one dude, right? And so he cast out all these demons, and the Bible says that the guy came in his right mind, and he sat down at the feet of Christ. The whole time Jesus is teaching, he puts himself in a position intentionally. Now check this out. He could have very easily gone and sat at the back of the crowd. But he said, no, I'm going to get to the feet of Jesus. That's intentional. When I was in school, my parents said, you always sit in the front row. I said, why? They said, because when you sit in the front row, you pay more attention, you'll learn more, you'll be smarter, sit at the front row. And I noticed that if I ever sat in the back row, I never paid attention, right? So I had to be intentional of putting myself at the very feet of the teacher so I could learn the most. this guy puts himself at the feet of Jesus. He is just consuming all that Christ has for him. And he's intentional about it. But check out this very end. As Jesus was getting into the boat, this is Mark 5:18, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." Let me pause right there for a second. I just always think this is the most interesting thing. We're always asking for followers. We're always asking for disciples. And Jesus has this guy that's got the most incredible story you can imagine. And he's got the opportunity to add to his disciples. And the guy's saying, "Please let me go with you." And Jesus says, "No. Go home. And tell everybody there what God's done for you." And listen, the guy doesn't get mad. We don't see him pout. We don't see him get frustrated. But here's what we would do. We're asking God, "God, do this for me. Let me do this." And God says, "No. Do something else." And we say, "Well, forget you. You're not God anyway. Oh, I'm mad." We get so frustrated with God sometimes. And I think the reason we get frustrated with God is because we don't have an intentional relationship with Him. We have a casual relationship with Him, but not intentional, where I'm setting, creating the space to do this. This guy did. So Jesus says, "No, you go home." Verse 20. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis, which is an area of 10 cities, how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. This guy wants to follow Christ wherever he goes. "Where you go, I'll follow." And Jesus says, "You can't follow me. I've got a job for you somewhere else." He doesn't get mad. He doesn't get frustrated. He just does it. And the Bible says, in an area of 10 cities, all the people were amazed at what Jesus had done. Can you imagine what would happen in this church if we became intentional in our relationship with Jesus Christ? If we were passionate in our worship? If we were irrational in our generosity? If we loved every person that walked through those doors, can you imagine what would happen? I'll tell you what would happen. All the people would be amazed at the story of Christ. At this church, we don't have a vision for one city. I never have. I never have. It's always frustrated me because all my other friends that were church planners, they all said, "God's given me a heart for Louisville. God's given me a heart for Tuscaloosa. God's given me a heart for Montgomery." And they always have this heart for a city. God's never given me a heart for a city. It frustrated me. I thought something was wrong with me. But as God began to unfold the vision that He had given me, it was for cities, not a city. It was for communities. It was for surrounding areas. And I believe God wants to do something. Maybe it's in 10 cities, 10 communities in this area. But it's got to start right here at Ten Valley Circle. And it's got to start with us saying, "I will be intentional in my walk with Christ."
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more info about Gateway Family, visit our website, gatewayfamily.cc.